Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Dr. Payal Gupta. She is a triple board certified adult and pediatric allergy, asthma, and immunologist who's medical director for allergy, asthma, and immunology, and ENT for CLEARD, a teleallergy platform that's powered by LifeMD. CLEARD provides allergy care across all 50 states in the U.S., and Dr. Gupta is also a clinical instructor at Mount Sinai Hospital and also has an appointment at SUNY Downstate Medical Center in New York City. Payal, welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I wonder if you could give us a little bit more of an introduction about yourself, your background, and what led you from your clinical interest into the technology companies that you're involved with, and how do those connect?
Sure. So, I think with the pandemic, a lot of people kind of looked at their lives and looked at the changes that were happening and kind of where they wanted to be. And for me, I was pregnant during the pandemic, and I just realized that telemedicine and the use of telemedicine could not only be safer for the patients that we were treating, but also safer for me as a provider. And it really led me to dive deep and look at the possibilities within the teleallergy space in particular, start a company we started a company during the pandemic in teleallergy, and fortunately, it went really well, and we were able to treat a lot of patients virtually, and then were acquired by LifeMD, and now are part of a bigger telemedicine kind of platform where we can provide care to even more patients.
Great. So I am a lifelong allergy sufferer myself, various allergies, and I know I'm sure many listeners have issues as well. I was surprised to learn that these could lead to lost days of work, perhaps the number one reason for losing work days, lost productivity, lost quality of life. I know I'm miserable when I'm suffering, but I sort of chalk that up as something to live with. But the cost, I gather, is tremendous, both at a personal level and at a societal level.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you kind of hit all of those different factors. Allergies, sometimes people can kind of consider them to be benign conditions, something that, like you said, that you just have to live with. But in honesty, they really do affect people's quality of life. And, we see that in the way that people sleep because of their allergies, the way that people function throughout their day, and then even just the annual cost of allergies in this country exceeds over $18 billion. And so I think, and we're talking specifically about environmental allergies right now, but, there's also food allergies and asthma and other allergic conditions that also have a huge burden on people's lives. And so I think that allergies are often underestimated. And unfortunately, with environmental allergies, we're actually seeing the rise of more people having environmental allergies because of global warming and the effects on the climate. We see higher pollen counts, longer seasons, and that's all gonna, so unfortunately, and fortunately for me, I guess allergies are not going anywhere. People are unfortunately going to continue to suffer, and for a lot of people, suffer even worse than they did before.
Yeah, well, not something that we want to hear about as a growth industry, but I guess that's where we're at between environmental changes, as you mentioned, global warming. And I think all of us have become more conscious over the last couple of years about indoor air quality. And I'm wondering whether that is a factor in severe allergies for people, and whether the increased focus on indoor air quality and air filtration may be, you know, a benefit to folks who suffer from allergies and asthma.
So yes, indoor air quality actually can affect people with allergies, perhaps more than other people. And so, there has been a greater focus of the indoor air quality because of COVID and everything that's been happening, and air filtration systems. We've looked into them for allergic conditions in the past, and they can help with certain allergens that tend to be kind of more airborne. For example, like if you're allergic to your animal, having a better air filtration system can help you so that you don't suffer from your pet allergy as much. And then, of course, for people with asthma and other lung conditions, just having cleaner air is just better for their breathing in general. So yes, I think that, you know, there's a focus on outdoor with the climate change, but then indoor air quality is also something that we need to be aware of.
Sure. I'm interested to hear more about the journey that you've been on with the telemedicine companies and how that relates to asthma care and management. Strikes me as an interesting vehicle for treating this particular category of conditions. And certainly with the pandemic, there's been a focus on telemedicine for many conditions. I'm wondering whether there have been any particular challenges when it comes to treating allergy and asthma using telemedicine.
Yes. So, you know, telehealth for a lot of conditions has obviously grown during COVID, and in particular for conditions that require specialty care, I think it's super exciting because a lot of people in rural areas even, you know, have had a hard time finding a specialist or going to a specialist because it might take them 2 to 3 hours to get to a provider. And so I think the cool thing about telemedicine is that it provides access to those patients to a specialist. And oftentimes I think what people don't realize is that even if, with the technologies that we have now, we can not only, you know, diagnose a patient by sending them to a local lab facility, for example. So in the space of allergic conditions, you know, we can send a patient to a local laboratory to get their blood test done, or we can also send them a test kit at home. So there are ways of doing blood tests in the home where the patient can, you know, use a small sample of blood and we can analyze it and see what they're allergic to. So there's a lot of cool things happening in this space where you oftentimes don't even have to leave your home in order to get diagnosed and treated. And then, of course, your treatments can be sent to your home directly through these nationwide pharmacies that deliver to, you know, to people that deliver the medications to people's homes. But for any condition, I think a lot of physicians and a lot of people that were kind of questioning telemedicine pre-COVID, I think the question is always, can you treat every condition through telemedicine in this way? And you can and you can't, you know. I think in a lot of ways, telemedicine can also be used as a screening tool, in the sense that we can allow patients to have that initial conversation with a specialist to see if they even need to drive that 2 to 3 hours to get further diagnostics. For physicians, the history is oftentimes the most important thing that we get from a patient. And so sometimes we don't even have to lay our hands on them, but just talking to them and asking them the right questions can help guide our decision points on what treatment or what diagnostic kind of parameter we might need in order to help give them the next treatment option or the next call to therapy. And so I think with asthma in particular, we're starting to delve deeper into that and look at our options for at-home diagnostic tools like testing your lung function in the home and how that can be used. And then also for me, what I geek out on is that in between visits is really where I think telemedicine and the technology that we have within this space can really help patients, where we can really communicate with the patient more effectively in between visits. We can, send them text messages. We can send them emails just to kind of check in. And all of that can be automated, which you can't do in a regular practice. You know, I unfortunately could never set up an entire system in my, brick and mortar office with limited resources to make sure that I'm following up with every single patient, for a patient that I'm really concerned about, even being able to send them a text message or communication once a week just to say, how are you feeling? Is everything okay? And even just one or two questions sometimes can help guide, the next step in a patient's therapy and can help us understand if the patient needs more help, if that makes sense.
Sure. I'm wondering, as you're discussing the use of telemedicine, I'm wondering whether there are home-based monitors, connected devices that could be used by patients to either monitor their conditions or their environments, and to have that sort of feedback into your telemedicine platform. I understand the idea of sort of outbound messages, but I'm wondering whether the inbound sort of automated messages may be of use as well.
Absolutely. So remote patient monitoring is something that is also being heavily looked at now. And that also for, the asthmatic patient, for example, is a tool that we can use to monitor, for example, their inhaler use. So there's actually a lot of digital inhalers coming out for asthma where the inhaler itself is linked to a data, a data that's then transferred to the physician and to that clinic so that you can see if a patient's, number one, using a medication that you want them to use regularly, if they're doing that. And number two, if they're overusing, for example, a rescue medication for their asthma, can we then, monitor that data and see, hey, you know what, patient X is using their albuterol this week a lot more than we want them to. So what's going on? We should check in with the patient, see if there's something happening, something going on. Maybe they're just sick right now. Is there something that we could add on to their treatment right now to prevent them from getting even more sick and, potentially requiring an urgent care visit or a hospitalization? So I think that we're absolutely looking at, monitoring patients and doing some of that remote patient monitoring, getting that data from patient treatments and from how patients are feeling on an inbound level too.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Dr. Payal Gupta, who is an allergist, immunologist, and is involved in telemedicine for allergy and asthma, and in her spare time is also a podcaster with a delightfully named podcast called The Itch. Payal, I'm wondering if you could talk to us more about the opportunities to track changes in outcomes for patients. Do you see telemedicine as just a convenience or as an opportunity to really drive better management of patients' conditions?
No, absolutely. As I was just, you know, talking about my example with asthmatic patients, I think that telemedicine is absolutely an opportunity for us to be able to monitor patients more effectively, communicate with patients more effectively in order to almost predict when their condition is getting worse by the, you know, remote patient monitoring devices that we have, in order to kind of change their therapy early in their disease progression, as opposed to waiting until they're in that mode of crisis and ending up in the emergency room or urgent care and then ultimately getting hospitalized. So I think that the information that we're looking at, the, you know, I think there's a lot of talk about getting too much data and what is the right amount of data in order to help a patient. And I think that over time, we're really going to figure out what that sweet spot is, where we're going to get that those data points that are really going to be truly predictive and informative of how to help patients in various conditions. You know, as an asthma specialist, I'm particularly focused on the asthmatic patient, but we can do that for so many other conditions. And that's what I think is so exciting about telemedicine. And then, of course, reaching that patient that is in more of a remote area that might not have access to a specialist is also really exciting.
Right. You mentioned an interesting thing. So we're talking about remote patient monitoring, and that's sort of newly payable by Medicare and in different ways, and presumably other payers will follow Medicare as well. And the issue there is sort of, what are you monitoring? How are you monitoring? And you just highlighted an interesting question, which is, how do we focus in on key predictors? This is sort of the perennial question. We can monitor lots of stuff. We can ingest into a system a huge amount of data, and then the problem is separating the wheat from the chaff. What's meaningful? What's predictive? And I imagine the more data that's ingested into your systems, the more you're able to discover what data points might in fact be predicted. And I'm wondering whether in the course of your journey over the past couple of years, you feel that you're getting any closer to focusing in on a handful of data points that you might be more interested in tracking rather than boiling the ocean, so to speak, with every patient.
Yes, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, we are looking at multiple data points, and I think we are getting closer for that asthmatic patient to, you know, try to figure out what data points we think will be more helpful. As I said, you know, looking at the utilization of their regular controller medications, seeing if they're regularly using those, those are data points that we haven't been able to monitor for a patient in a regular clinical setting without these remote patient monitoring devices. And so just having that ability to know that a patient's truly taking their medications, especially for a patient with asthma, can really change the trajectory of their treatment plan, because it allows us to be able to know that, yes, they're truly compliant with their therapy. And now we do need to use something that's much stronger. Whereas in the past, you're kind of really just relying on patient history, like their verbal history. And oftentimes patients over-report their use of medications because they want to, you know, they want to make the doctor feel like they're following their instructions. And so this kind of takes away that variability in patient reporting and allows us to change treatment protocols based on what we truly know the patient is doing. And I think that that's really, really important in an asthmatic patient, because oftentimes we kind of just start throwing the kitchen sink at certain patients, because we think that, oh my God, they're on all of these treatments and they're still not doing well. And you don't get that.
Turns out they're just not using their inhalers or taking their meds, right?
Exactly. You're not getting that true compliance data from the patient, because again, patients want to make the doctor happy. They want to say that, you know, all the advice that they were given, that they're truly following that advice. And so I think just in that respect, we know that, you know, this data should be and can be helpful. And so, yes, like I said, I'm just excited about that, especially in severe asthma. We just want to make sure that we're using the right treatments and that we're not, and that we're truly diagnosing someone with severe asthma and just, and not just somebody that's not compliant with their medications.
Payal, a moment ago, you mentioned as a category of people who might be quote unquote disenfranchised, the rural populations who might not be able to get into town to see a specialist. And I'm wondering if you see with the telemedicine platform opportunities or in actuality, reaching out to other traditionally disenfranchised populations, or is the digital factor a barrier to some?
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of people looking at this very question. I'm not going to say that I'm an expert in this particular topic, but I've personally looked at it for our company because I'm very interested in reaching out to more underserved populations and how we can better serve them through telemedicine. And so there is that, you know, that question mark of, you know, in rural areas, do you have the connectivity that you need? But I think what we're finding is that, you know, most people do have a smartphone, and that's oftentimes all you need to have a digital consult. And so I think that in most cases, they are finding that that phones are readily available, and that means that access to care can be made available. But, you know, it's reaching those populations digitally that I think is also the goal. How do you reach a patient? How do you reach particular patients? Meaning, you know, you're doing a lot of digital marketing and things like that, but then, you know, do you partner with rural clinics? Do you partner with rural hospitals? Like how do you make the digital innovation that you're creating available to the populations that you want to serve? And I think that's the other thing that that we're looking at as a company, is how do we want to do that? How do we want to ensure that we are in fact reaching those patients that need to be reached?
Well, all very interesting. And to wrap things up, I want to ask you my final question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what is one thing in healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed drastically?
I think we just actually spoke about it, which is I would hope that our knowledge about telemedicine in particular and how we can effectively use what we're learning and to reach those patients that truly need to be reached, whether it's, you know, in rural populations here in the US or whether it's rural populations elsewhere in the world. How can we use this ability of technology and the ability to access a physician anywhere in the world to help treat patients in other parts of the world or other parts of the country where they might not have access? That would be, I think, my ultimate goal. And one of my mentors who's mission in life was to serve the poor, just actually passed away, Dr. Paul Farmer, who had started Partners in Health. And I think since his unfortunate early, very, very too early passing, it's just really made me stop and think about that question a lot and think about how and what we're doing right now could help the people that truly need to be helped.
Well, thank you. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you again for having me.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.